Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it is Mariners reliever Penn Murphy. Penn, how's it going?
Doing great, thank you.
We're happy to have you on the show. You made your debut less than a month ago. It's probably been a pretty hectic month. Obviously, you guys didn't get the win, but you struck out too. Solid day for you. How's the last month felt?
The last month has felt like baseball. We definitely some more wins along the way, but in terms of personal perspective from it, it's been a dream come true. The guys in the locker room have been unreal. And the team is just the team's been a really, really fun group to be around. So no complaints from my end, but we're looking to piece some things together here moving forward.
Ben, I've done a little bit of digging into your background, and you have a fascinating journey, my friend. Like I am excited to talk to you about, just kind of, your journey and what you've been through and kind of the mindset that you've had. I mean, there was at one point in time where in college you were kind of looking at potentially walking away from the game of baseball. Can you talk to us about, where you were at in your college career in terms of your decision to take, you were really a fork in the road and taking two different paths of maybe going out and looking more as a business venture, going to Silicon Valley versus continuing to play your baseball career, and what got you to that point where you said, I'm going to go 2 feet in and I'm going to focus on baseball?
Yeah, so my senior year at Vanderbilt, I was coming off of my first groin surgery. I was kind of up a creek without a paddle, didn't really know what I was doing. And one of my mentors back in Nashville said I'd be a fool not to use my extra year of eligibility that I got, being a redshirt. So I started looking into grad programs, and my coach out at Santa Clara, Rusty Filter, had recruited me a little bit in high school. So I gave him a shout and flew out to California, looked into their data analytics program, and thought it was something that I wanted to do. We lined it up, and Rusty Filter took a chance on me, and I think to thank him for that. But I was really just directionless. That's the best way I can put it. I was kind of like, well, I've been playing this sport my whole life, and my dad's kind of in the business world and taught me about what he did, and it just kind of honestly happened. I found myself at Santa Clara, going to school thinking that I'd be going into, into the business world, and I kind of just played good enough, I guess, to get some feeler calls from scouts. And when they called and asked if I would sign, I was like, I can always come back to the desk. But for the time being, like, why not just give it a shot? And my first year, I stunk so bad that my pride kind of kicked up. And I was like, I'm not going to go back out there and stink. I'm going to give it everything I have. And here we are. It's just kind of it worked out.
That's amazing, man. That's absolutely incredible. And for you, it kind of sounds like there was a moment, as you talked about directionless. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did you lose at some point a love for the game? Was that kind of part of the reason why it kind of felt directionless for you?
Yeah, you could say that. It did start to feel like a chore in some ways, but I've always enjoyed being around teammates. Mm-hmm. I've always loved being on a team, and getting to meet people from all over the world. I've met some incredible, incredible people, men and women alike, and just like, the stories that I have to tell and getting to know people is something that I really enjoyed. So I always enjoyed that part of it. And I think when I started feeling myself drift away from the game, that's what I was like, man, I'm going to miss this.
Yeah.
But the game itself, yes, there was definitely some times where I was going, why the heck am I still putting myself through this?
At what point, Penn, was that where that changed for you, where you re-fell in love with the game again and you were like, this is exactly where I want to be?
It was after 2018. I had just finished up short season in Everett, hosted like a 6.5 ERA or something with more walks than strikeouts. Like, it was really bad. And I was back in Nashville. I was working in internship doing data analytics for a healthcare company, a workers' comp company. And I was going to the gym after my workday by myself, throwing into a net, and just working out completely by myself every day. And I really just, I had that moment, I guess, over the course of a couple weeks where I looked back and I was like, man, I'm actually really enjoying this time, like playing the game by myself, throwing sliders into a net with no one to judge me and, mm-hmm. you know, working on my fastball or mechanics or whatever. And it just became a therapeutic experience. And the light bulb kind of went off and I was like, well, nothing's stopping me from doing that in front of however many people watching. And, you know, that's when I kind of, it clicked on again. I was like, okay, this is something that I do enjoy and I'm not worried about how I look doing it anymore.
That's awesome.
Now, Penn, you're obviously young, but as far as, you know, being someone who got to kind of a fork in the road and nearly went a different direction before deciding to throw yourself back into baseball, do you find yourself getting really passionate about those kinds of conversations with people? Meaning, like, have you had conversations with people when they're like, oh, am I too old to get into, and then, you know, whatever passion that they care about because they're worried that, you know, they can't turn things around? Do you find yourself really caring about those kinds of conversations?
I am surrounded by baseball people on a day-to-day basis. But I do enjoy the in-the-weeds conversations, yes. I wouldn't say that I've had too many conversations with people about, like, oh, I'm, you know, I'm kind of second-guessing this. I don't know if my age is kind of appropriate. But yeah. I try and encourage people to pick up stuff all the time. Like, I picked up guitar in 2019. You know, I probably picked it up 15 times as a kid. But I started late on that too. I picked up surfing very late, and I've talked with people about that. And I think that me being open about it has encouraged some people that I've come across, but I guess you could say I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I'm always about it. It's never too late, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. And Penn, now here you are, you're up at the big league level and pitching with the Mariners and have done a fantastic job, you know, in doing so. What has that been like for you? You know, getting up to this, to the big league level and being able to do, you know, what you love, knowing all the adversity that has come along with it.
Every day is a blessing. Every day is a gift. And like, I wake up in the morning, I just, you know, thank God for giving me this opportunity and just try and remember that, like, we're so lucky and it's so easy in this game with all the crazy stuff going on around us to focus on, you know, a bad outing or this and that. But like, we really are just living a dream. It's a fairy tale. And I just couldn't be happier. This is an incredible experience. I feel more fortunate than anybody.
Now, Penn, I saw that at one point, you know, while you were in the minor leagues, that that you guys were listening to Motley Crue in the clubhouse. Oh, yeah. Is it a clubhouse or was it in the bullpen during games?
In the clubhouse.
Okay. So Have you been able to get that worked in with the Mariners up to this point, or are you still working your way to that?
I don't control the aux cord. You know, I might have some years left until I get that privilege. But we got a good couple DJs on the squad, so I'm not rushing to do it.
I don't know. I'm a big advocate of just loitering around one of the DJs and just, hey man, what do you think about this? I can hook up my phone if you want. Hey Penn, go ahead.
No, I was going to say my Spotify library has, you know, more personalities than schizophrenia. So I don't know if people would necessarily follow along. But
no, I love it. I love it. You're from Nashville and obviously Seattle on the other end of the country pretty much. Have you found yourself, now the answer to this might be just no, I hate this question, but we've had conversations with Ryan Roland-Smith, who's Australian, and he'll tell us, like, you know, slang that he'll use that he realizes too late that people in Seattle don't understand. Is there anything you've done where you've been like, oh, culture divide, like, never mind. Like, this is not Nashville.
Trying to think. I say y'all a lot. I don't really hear a whole lot of people up in Seattle saying y'all. So that would be one thing, but... Yeah, I mean, every part of the country, I've been all over the country, I've been all over the world, and that's something that I enjoy trying to pick out is, like, you know, how people do things differently. And it's just unique pieces of culture that I kind of put in my back pocket, and it's how I, you know, categorize wherever I go. And I try to pick out the good things, you know. I don't really focus on stuff that I don't like. I focus on things that, you know, that people up in Seattle or Boston or wherever mm-hmm. are doing things that I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. That's different, you know, but... I like that.
Penn, I love that. And, you know, one of the things that I was curious to ask from you is you seem like a guy that's got a ton of personality, a lot of fun. How has it been, you know, going through the system here with the Mariners, you know, at each level and now getting up to the big league club? You know, what has that environment been like culturally, you know, in terms of, you know, experiencing every step and finally getting to that big league level?
Yeah, the main thing I would describe it as is streamlined. The Mariners have done an incredible job having the same verbiage and language and message to every single player in the system. So it's a very easy transition once you get up to big leagues. Now, there are a few things that we go a little more in depth on up here because you're kind of seeing more of the same crop of players. Whereas in the minor leagues, you know, those teams and rosters can really turn over quite a bit. But as far as like our scouting reports and how we preach our approach to pitchers and hitters, it's been very streamlined, which is really cool and really, really awesome to see. But yeah, I mean, they've done a really good job, and obviously, like, they gave me all the chances in the world when I really didn't warrant it. So I'm super thankful for that. And if I had been with another club out of Santa Clara, gotten drafted by a different team, I don't know if I'd be sitting here talking to y'all. I'm just, like I said, I feel like the luckiest man in the world.
Penn, you could give me a generic answer and say, hey, look, any opportunity to get out there on the mound is a blessing and everything else, and I wouldn't disagree with you. But is there one place that you are excited to pitch at or a team that you're excited to pitch against?
Oh, yeah. I'm standing in it. Fenway Park was I've got my mom and dad just flew in this morning. My dad and I, you know, growing up in Nashville, we got a lot of Braves games, Cincinnati games. But for some reason, you know, Fenway Park was always what my dad and I talked about. And just the history here. And, you know, when I was in, like, middle school, Pedro Martinez and David Ortiz and the championships they were winning, we kind of became, you know, walk-on fans. You know, we jumped on the bandwagon a little bit, I guess you could say. But we always had a reverence for Fenway. And I love how, you know, the city of Boston really rallies around their sports teams, especially the Sox. And Green Monster, just everything about it, you know? And I'm really, really looking forward to being able to tow the rubber up in Fenway. If I had to give you a second answer, I'd probably say Dodger Stadium. But Fenway Park takes the cake, and I'm so thankful that my parents could be here for the next 2 days. Hopefully I can toss the rock in front of them.
Yeah, we're hoping that's the case. And Penn, you are such an easy guy to root for, and we'll certainly be rooting for you when we see you take the mound, fingers crossed, at Fenway. So thanks so much for joining us, man. We really appreciate it, and for being so candid as well.
No problem. Thank you all, and go M's.
All right, Penn, let's go, man.
Man, I'm going to...
All right, thank y'all.
Thank you.
Ben.
Bye-bye.
I'm just going to be saying y'all. I meant to ask him, like, hey, just scientifically, like, you know, if we're being just definitions, when does y'all become all y'all? Like, what's the minimum number of people? But we did not get into it.
You know, that's an important question that we left on the table.
Thank you. I really did leave it on the table.
We'll have to come back to that. But certainly now, after this interview, a huge Penn Murphy fan. And also, if he does hit the rubber here in Fenway, all I can think about is him talking about Fenway Park, you know, throwing
you're gonna
out
be
that.
Up there. It'll be like, you know, the eighth or seventh or whatever. It's going to be like Penn Murphy, and it won't matter the score. You're going to be like, let's go.
I know. I want him.
Everyone listening, my guy.
Three up, three down. Let's go, baby. Come on.
All right. That was Mariners reliever Penn Murphy. Wonderful interview with him. Thanks again, Penn, for joining us. As a reminder for you guys, Monday, May 23rd is the Title IX 50th anniversary celebration at T-Mobile Park. The Mariners are celebrating with a ticket special. It gives you access to a pregame panel hosted by Root Sports' Angie Mentink before the game. Then you can watch the M's take on the A's with a 6:40 p.m. first pitch. Find tickets at mariners.com/title9. That's Roman numerals, so it's mariners.com/title IX. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
All right. First up, we have the Celtics even up the Eastern Conference Finals with a blowout win over the Heat. What's the real headline?
It's a great win for Boston, a city desperate for more championships. You know, just such an... Speaking of people easy to root for, any team from Boston. Boston fans, definitely... Definitely them.
The sarcasm is
I don't know what you mean.
Dripping.
I don't know what you mean.
No, it is not easy to root for them, and it is painful to watch them have any sort of success.
I mean, on the other end of the
I root
Miami
against
Heat.
Them so much. I root against the city of Boston so much, and a large part of it is due to the fact that they have been so incredibly successful with their pro sports teams and the fan base. Look, it's just a different fandom, right? And you have been blessed with having that much winning. The expectations are higher, and I appreciate a fan base that doesn't really accept mediocrity, but at the same time, there is a spoiled aspect of it that I cannot stand, absolutely cannot stand, because you have zero perspective whatsoever.
Wasn't there an article that came out very recently an interview where Robert Kraft was like, it bothers me the Patriots haven't won a playoff game in 3 years. And it was like, yeah. 3 years? Oh my God. The horror.
Oh no.
Fire everyone.
That's right. It's going to get there, Stacey. It's going to get there. And if they keep this craziness up with their offensive coordinators or not having an offensive coordinator, making Joe Judge and Matt Patricia potentially the play callers for the New England Patriots offense, yeah, you could start finding some people that are going to get really mad really quickly.
I want them to take me up on my suggestion to make it like a reality show. I have one clipboard in front of me, but two offensive coordinators stand before me.
Oh.
One of you must go home.
Man.
Joe Judge, please pack your whistle and go.
The backstabbing that would occur.
Amazing.
Oh, it'd be
the confessionals.
Yes. But the confessionals would be like five-word confessionals.
Matt Patricia being in his confessional, like, yeah, I don't really know what he's doing right now, but whatever.
It's exactly what it would be. It would be
not
it would
excited
be
at all.
So boring. So boring.
Headline rewrites.
All right, on to some golf. We have Rory McIlroy leads the PGA Championship after day one. Tiger Woods trails by 9 strokes. What's the real headline?
Tiger Woods will always draw eyes, but I don't know that we'll see the reward again. That's the real headline. The real headline is, why are we talking about this? Why are we talking about this? Is it Rory McIlroy? No, it's Tiger Woods.
It hurts.
That's why this headline is.
It hurts because you're right. But we're going to get drawn in every single time.
Exactly.
Just like you and any trashy reality TV show.
What do you mean
show?
Drawn in? It's the reward is there. It's amazing. New season of The Circle. Great. Love is Blind. Fantastic. The Ultimatum. Very rewarding. 90 Day Fiancé. Sign me up. Married at First Sight. Great.
Sure. Jake, do you speak this language or no?
I speak
Real
like a
of Potomac.
Hint of it.
I'm there.
Like a hint of it, I do. I do watch The Bachelor. Brooke and I did start watching Married at First Sight.
Do you want to mention the show that you mentioned you were watching the other day?
I don't know.
On Hulu?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No, I do not.
That'll be a show secret.
Yeah, that'll be a show secret. So I do speak it a little bit, but not to the level. Stacey is fluent in crazy reality.
Big.
But.
Huge.
The thing is that with Tiger Woods, you want to witness history, okay?
Yeah.
And everyone knew that Tiger Woods, with all the injuries, with everything that he went through personally in his life, and the performances that he was having, that for a long time, everyone knew that Tiger Woods was going down, okay? And that he was not going to be able to reclaim his former glory. Then he goes and wins the Masters a few years ago, and everybody is just, man, I cannot miss the next moment. Tiger Woods may be able to somehow, some way, randomly in whatever tournament that he plays, could recapture the former glory and the potential of Tiger Woods, and I want to be able to be there to witness history. That's the draw every single time. And you're right. More often than not, we're not going to see the payoff. But Stacey, what if we do? And that's what's going to keep us coming back.
I feel like the theme of headline rewrites today is winners. Whether it's they used to be winners and we're waiting to see them win again, whether they're still winning and we're kind of waiting to see them lose, or whether in the case of the next headline, you're wondering whether they can sustain it.
Yes.
Headline rewrites.
All right, wrapping it up, we have the two-time defending champions, Tampa Bay Lightning, who scored the game-winning goal with 4 seconds left in Thursday's win over the Florida Panthers. They lead the series 2-0, heading back to Tampa. What's the real headline?
The rich get richer, playoff version. That is what we're going through right now with the NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs. But you know what? I don't mind it because I think the Tampa Bay Lightning are really fun to watch. I think that I've enjoyed the Eastern Conference Finals. Obviously, Luka and the West, like, they're fun to watch. There's all kinds of fun narratives, so I'm not complaining. Mm-hmm. There are teams I hate more. It's not like I hate you if you're winning, but that's certainly a theme of some of these playoffs.
Well,
right now,
part of it is how are you doing it, right? The Lightning got into a little bit of controversy with how they went about their roster building.
They didn't do anything wrong.
They didn't do anything wrong, but it was controversial, was it not?
Because haters want to hate.
Okay, haters want to hate, but you could also say that about the New England Patriots.
It was controversial. They found a loophole and they exploited it.
They did. Now, for them, is that wrong or is that smart?
It's competitive.
Yeah.
It's not wrong. It's competitive.
But the New England Patriots, you could say what they did was wrong, right?
Yes.
I mean, Spygate.
The Astros.
And
wrong.
Astros wrong. Deflategate, that was the most ridiculous, craziest, overblown thing I've ever heard of. But, you know, again, not following through with the rules and just constant controversy. The Tampa Bay Lightning, or any organization that is able to find consistent winning at a high level like this, it impresses the heck out of me. And I have become much less of a hater of teams. Like, you know, you always root for the underdog.
Yeah.
But you always, for whatever reason, want to hate the people that are on top, right? That are just always there. You want somebody new.
I've softened on my hate for the Patriots and Bill Belichick and Tom Brady since they've all separated. I like them all more now that they are not a collective unit.
Interesting. I have come to appreciate greatness. I have come to appreciate being able to find sustained success because it is so incredibly hard in general and especially in pro sports. And
sellout.
I'm not a sellout.
No.
I just.
It's yes.
It
I
is
agree.
Impressive to me how you're able to consistently do that. Leadership, culture, you name it. It is something that everyone strives to have, and everybody is envious of if you do not have it.
All right, it's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com. Michael Bumpus joins us next. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Hour of Jake and Stacey, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Joining us now in the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it is Michael Bumpus. Bump, how's it going? Happy Friday, by the way.
Happy Friday to you and Jake as well. I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We are well. We actually got into a big debate earlier, not necessarily between the two of us, but there was so much back and forth from listeners and great points brought up, even ones I disagreed with, great points brought up. So I'm gonna start there, and it's a loaded question.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Let's get it.
Okay. Can you win a Super Bowl without a franchise quarterback?
Ooh, can you win a Super Bowl without a franchise quarterback? I always think of these great teams that had really good defenses, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of they carried the team while they had a quarterback who kind of played shotgun. You know what I mean? Can you win without a franchise quarterback? No. But I think that you can win with a quarterback that you think is a franchise quarterback, but really isn't, right? Because at some point you buy into the fact that this is our guy. He's going to be our guy for the next 2 or 3 years. Then the season rolls around and the defense plays well. You make plays on special teams and things happen. And then the season's over and you're like, look, we didn't win because of that guy. Let's start looking for more pieces.
You know, the conversation around this, Bump, is a fascinating one because you can make a lot of different arguments, but the hard part is that for any fan that sits there and says you don't need a quarterback to be able to do it, and reference Trent Dilfer or Brad Johnson or any of these like complete outlier situations, they fail to look at the fact that they built an elite defense, not just an elite defense, but historically elite with historical all-pro future Hall of Fame type of players. There is a lot. That's a lot to ask any team to say, oh, yeah, no problem. We don't need the quarterback. Go ahead, Pete and John, put together another historic elite defense. How hard is it for somebody to win like that?
Extremely hard. And those were the two situations I thought about when you asked me that question, right? I'm thinking of Trent, I'm thinking of Brad, I'm thinking of the Bucs defense and that Ravens defense. That's such a hard ask. It's almost like you stumble across those situations.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You don't go in and say, we're going to build one of the greatest defenses of all time. No, it kind of just happens. And then you realize that you don't need superstars in other pieces. So No, Jake, I don't think you can go out with that approach. I think you can go out and say, look, we're going to start with our defense. We're going to build a really good defense, but an historic defense, that kind of just happens.
Okay, so Pump, you know, now there it is a new era of Seahawks football, and it's really hard to get everything going and clicking right away from day one, and you know that there's going to be continuous movement with the roster and reshaping it and all that over the years. So what would be the number one thing for you to see established in year one in this new era? A elite defense or an elite running game?
Man, both are crucial, right? I mean, run game, you control the tempo of the game. You feel like you're in control of the identity of the game. Defense, you're causing turnovers. You're changing momentum. You're making those big plays. Man, honestly, I think that it has to start with a defense. And I think it starts with a defense because if you're allowing cats to put up 45 and you're only putting up 20, you ain't going to be in the game. If you're holding cats to under 20 and you got a team that's scrappy and who's going to put up 14, 17 points, you might be in that game. So if I had to pick one, I think both are essential to rebuilding and trying to create something in the organization. But for me, I will start with the defense.
Speaking of defense, let's talk Seahawks defense. Can they be great this year? Can they be elite? How do you see their ceiling? And then what factors are playing into that? It could be specific players, for instance.
Oh, man, I think they can be really good. And I think they can be good, one, because of the coaching staff that's over there now. I mean, we heard Clint Hurt over there with Mike Salk in the morning. We hear about Desai, Carl Scott. We hear the way Pete Carroll talks about them. And I think that because this coaching staff is on the same page, they're trying something different, and I'm looking at their ideas, and I'm looking at the personnel, I'm saying, okay, this defense has a really good chance of being good. Now, to be elite, you got to do some things. You got to sack the quarterback like crazy. You got to be great against the pass. You got to be really good against the run. You got to cause turnovers. The Hawks have not been great at sacking a quarterback. They've been really good against the run over the past few years. Haven't been great with the ball in the air. So there's so many important factors to being a great defense that they have to show and prove that I think that they have the potential off of personnel to be a good defense, but to be elite, you got to come out the gate doing all of those things.
Yeah, and that's what's hard for me, Bump, right now. When I look at this roster, I mean, you could certainly talk yourself into, okay, I see what they did here, I see what they did here, and how this can turn into a very good, solid unit. But when it comes to the pass rush and overall what they have put together, this is not, you don't look at, you know, Nwosu and even Daryl Taylor at this point. He could turn into this guy, but up to this point, you don't have one clear guy that is going to, you feel very confident that he's going to get you 10 plus sacks. He's going to be the difference maker. He's going to be the one that everyone has to pay attention to. So do you see someone taking on that role and becoming that guy? Or do you think this is very much going to be about, you know, trying to accomplish what they were not able to last year, which is, you know, being able to have everyone across the board contribute?
Jake, I think if you look at the personnel that's out there, you have to go into this season thinking, okay, this is a committee type deal. Like you mentioned, there's no one over there who is going to demand extreme attention. There's no one over there on that defensive line in that box right now that teams are game planning for. Now, as the season progresses, guys can develop and that can happen. But right now, no, I just don't see that. And that doesn't mean they can't be a defense that gets after the quarterback. But it's always nice to have a guy that you know going to give you 10 to 11 guys. I thought Kerry Hyder was going to be that guy for the Hawks last year. It didn't work out for him. Carlos Dunlap ends up being that guy, but now he's gone. So because there's no one that has proven it, you know, you can't expect it. So I think it's going to be a committee type deal. Now on the back end, I think no matter who you put out there, there are some guys who can cause some interceptions and some turnovers. I think Trey Brown has capability. I think Kobe does. I think Quandre Diggs does, obviously, over the past few years. But as far as a pass rusher, I don't think there's a guy who demands that much attention right now.
Hey, Bump, speaking of defenses in general, there's a 30 for 30 in production on the Ravens 2000 team. If you could have, just a fun Friday question, if you could have any 30 for 30 on any team, athlete, any sports story, what would you choose?
Oh, man, who would it be? I would like to see... You know what? I like to see a 30 for 30. Now, obviously, you know, I'm an LA guy, right? Mm-hmm. I like a 30 for 30 and see how, because I'm watching Winning Time on HBO about the Lakers. So I want to see a 30 for 30 for Jerry West back in the day when he used to just get smacked by the Boston Celtics and see what that really was. Now, we don't have the technology, right? They weren't walking around with cameras and whatnot back then and following guys. But if I could just have an insight on what it was, because Jerry West is one of the most successful GMs, front office guys in all of sports. And for him to go through all that stuff, right, he had to have learned a lot and dealt with a bunch of stuff. So for him to turn that into a successful front office career, I'd like to see what those 60s, 70s Lakers look like.
Yeah, that's a good one right there. I like that. I think the obvious answer for everyone here in Seattle is the Legion of Boom era, yep. 30 for 30. You know, just be curious to know what angle they would want to take with that. You know, my hope is that they would focus more on the good times and focus more on the dynamic of what made them great rather than, you know, the issues and the drama that was around the team. But you know that they've got to throw that in there.
Yeah, you got to throw in the Legion of Boom. And Jake, I want to see the drama too, man, because that's what makes it spicy, right? And
it's
I also think I want to see the Astros, 30 for 30 on the Astros. Like, if we can get some insight and see some candid moments, I would love to watch that.
I didn't even think, I was thinking of my personal favorite teams, my personal favorite athletes. I didn't even think of juicy stories that I would want insight into.
The problem is that everyone at the Astros is not going to say anything.
Oh,
so that 30
would.
For 30
would
have to be everybody else in Major League Baseball just trashing on
the
Astros.
No, it's going to have to be like 10 years later after people aren't connected and they aren't afraid of talking about it. Maybe they've been wronged, right? There's been some bridges burned. They've been wronged by the organization.
Maybe.
And they're like, yeah, I'll talk.
Maybe.
Somebody's going to snitch, man.
That's exactly what's going to happen, and we are here for it, and I hope a production staff is as well. He is Michael Bumpus, joined us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Bump, thank you as always for joining us, and enjoy your weekend.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Bob.
It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Well, let's dive back into the NFL and take a look at what's happening around the league. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, taking a look around the NFL, and why don't we start with something I mentioned earlier, but I want to get back to it because we didn't spend nearly enough time, and that is Greg Rosenthal. You guys have heard him on the Around the NFL podcast. He's a contributor to NFL Network. He believes that there is a team in the NFC that is currently underrated. That team? The Seattle Seahawks. Now, he doesn't think they're going to be a Super Bowl team, mind you, but he did say that people aren't giving them enough credit. There's a little bit of variance with this offensive line. They could be above average. They could be horrible. He really likes the defense, and basically he says, look, if the defense is as good as I think they can be, and if the offensive line is on the better half of that, you know, scale, and you get passable quarterback play, I definitely think they can have a winning record.
I understand what he's saying. I also don't agree with it. I understand how you could talk yourself into, hey, if this goes right, if this goes right, if this goes right. But there's also a lot of, Stacey, if this goes right. Mm-hmm. And typically, if you have a lot of that, then the chances that everything hits and goes right is not high. And I think for this team, I am not concerned. I will say it over and over and over again. Wins is not the factor that is going to make this season a success for me. I am going to be looking at development. I am going to be looking at philosophy. I am going to be looking at and seeing if their identity can be formed and that it is clear in terms of what they're wanting to do and how and what they're wanting to accomplish. If they can establish that in year one, despite the wins and losses, I will deem that as a success, as a building block for them to get into the right direction. And I'm sorry for Seahawks fans that hear that and don't like to hear it, but that's also part of the reality of moving on and turning over a new leaf and not having a real solid option at the quarterback position, that you're taking a major risk with the situation that you have right now. That's just what's going on, and that's okay. But I think you are setting yourself up for failure here if the expectation going into the season is that it is going to be a winning record for this ball club. There's always room to be pleasantly surprised, but the winning, the win, wins and losses is not, to me, going to determine the success of this season for the Seattle Seahawks.
After leading the Colts to a 9-8 record and throwing for a staggering 3,500 yards, Carson Wentz says his release or trade came out of left field. That was a mean way to read that. What I should say is Carson Wentz, in an interview with the Colin Cowherd podcast, said, I thought things were in a pretty good place there, there being in Indianapolis. I had an awesome relationship with every person in the building. I can't say enough good things about the people there. It kind of came out of left field. Now, I do not think it came out of left field. I think that ownership, the team were kind of hinting at some dissatisfaction with Wentz. Here's the problem for Wentz. Wentz had a horrific 2020 season, throwing 15 interceptions. He passed for just 2,600 yards, missed some time. It was a horrible year for him. In 2021, he actually bounced back. Like, he had some pretty decent games, completed 62% of his passes, which is not an elite level. It's not even a career high, but almost every category was better than the year prior. So he did genuinely improve with Indianapolis. Not only that, but he technically led them to a winning record. The problem is, I think it just wasn't enough for Indy. I think Indy's looking at the roster they have and at the additions they've made and saying, like, you know what? No offense, but we're going to go ahead and go with a veteran who we think can get us just a little bit more bang for our buck.
Yeah.
So I see where Carson's coming from in terms of being like, but I thought everything was fine. But I think that that's in terms of his own career and much less what Indy might want for 2022.
Yeah, I think that they are in a situation where they want desperately to not only get in the playoffs, but to capitalize on the roster that they have and that they've built. The problem is as I said before, Carson Wentz's numbers, they look fine. When you just look at the numbers, just in and of itself, you're like, what? Why'd they get rid of him? But the problem is that when you have a guy that clearly was not a leader in the building and was someone from a culture standpoint, was helping set the culture in a positive way, then on top of that, you could not rely on him to come up with the big plays and the big moments in critical situations, in critical games. That's a problem. And if you can't do that, that's never going to fly for a team that's built to go to the playoffs. And that's why I think that the Indianapolis Colts got into a great situation moving on from Carson Wentz and being able to upgrade with somebody like Matt Ryan, who is going to be a leader, who is going to be, you know, steady Eddie and going to be able to come up with big plays for this offense and not necessarily have to be the, you know, the team is on his back, so to speak. He's just got to come up in clutch situations. And I think that Matt Ryan can deliver on that very much more than Carson Wentz ever could.
Sammy Watkins, you know, there's been so much chaos in the NFL offseason that despite my job literally being to know where everyone is playing, I kind of forgot that he's with Green Bay now. Like, there were so many moves that overshadowed this that I kind of had to remind myself, like, oh yeah, it's kind of like the, oh yeah, Carson Wentz is with Washington. Oh yeah, Sammy Watkins is in Green Bay now. He said that his new stop, he's feeling really good about it, in a good place with the Packers. He wasn't the number one, number two guy in Kansas City, obviously, an offense that had both Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and still has one of those two guys. And he's not going to be Devontae Adams in Green Bay. But when you look at what the Packers can try to do and you look at this team, how the heck can they replace Devontae Adams? And is Sammy Watkins going to be a big part of that, Jake?
Sammy Watkins, I don't think Sammy Watkins is going to be someone that you can go into the season and say, yes, Sammy Watkins is going to provide X for this team. However, if there's someone that I trust can get the most out of him, it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. And I believe that that could be a positive situation. But you also have to remember that Aaron Rodgers is also going to be trying to groom and help get Christian Watson up to speed as well. Their second round pick out of North Dakota State, who I personally like. He's got freaky traits. He is somebody that I think could be a very, very good receiver in this league. But losing out on Devontae Adams, Stacey, that is a big loss for them. And losing out on Valdez-Scantling, those are two big losses for that offense that was already in a situation where they were searching for more talent from a passing perspective. So a big question mark there in terms of the overall explosiveness that the Green Bay Packers offense can possess now that Devontae Adams is no longer there.
All right, that was a look around the NFL. Remind me, we'll get to it on Monday, not tomorrow. We're heading into the weekend, but if no one's heard that story of the one of one Tom Brady rookie card and how it wasn't actually one of one, fascinating story. I'll get back to it during NFL headlines on Monday in case you don't look it up over the weekend, but wild stuff. All right, so two things. Number one, Friday, May 27th is 90s night for the Mariners. The first 10,000 fans will receive a Mariners neon pink hat, so get your tickets now to watch the M's take on the Astros. Mariners.com/tickets. Secondly, is offense struggling around MLB, and if so, why? Let's bring on an expert. ESPN's Tim Kirkjian joins us next.